Hello, dear friends, and welcome to the Great Day Podcast. I'm your friend and host, Mayor K. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you're having a great day thus far. Now, I want to give a big shout out to SayMazelTov.com, today's sponsor of the episode. SayMazelTov.com is a place where you could book a personalized video message for your special occasion. If you got a friend's birthday, a family's anniversary, a bar, bat mitzvah, a wedding, you want to share words of inspiration with a friend or family member, you could go to SayMazelTov.com and book a personalized video message that you could create from scratch and get a singer, a comedian, a thought leader, over 100 people to choose from and make that message that much more personal. So check out SayMazelTov.com today. And talking about special occasions, today's a special day because we have Neshama Karlbach with us on the podcast. You see, Neshama is an award-winning singer, songwriter, educator who has performed and taught in cities around the world. She's a six-time entrant in the Grammy Awards and a winner and four-time nominee in the Independent Music Awards for her release, Believe. She was one of the creators of the Broadway play Soul Doctor, which I saw, and it was such an awesome experience. And boy, do I miss going to Broadway plays and going out and about. But soon, God willing, we'll be able to do so. Can't wait. Okay. Neshama began training as a singer and actress at the age of five. As a teenager, she's performed along her father, the late Rabbi Shlomo Karlbach. This episode is a very powerful one, an episode I hope you enjoy. All right. Here on the podcast today, which is making this a great day, we have Neshama Karlbach. Thank you so much for sharing your space and time with me today. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's awesome to see you, to be here. I really feel like we're, it doesn't feel like we're separated right now. It feels like we're in one space. I really like that.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I feel the same. Since we connected briefly, hopped on the phone, I reached out to you initially to have you join the Same Mazel Tov program.
Yes.
And from that moment on, there was a certain like this fluid flow that just took place. And you have such a welcoming, open energy that is so inviting to be a part of. And it really shows forth not just here in this conversation where we're talking for the very first time for reals, but through your music, through your way of being. I wonder, is this something that you've cultivated, or is this something that comes naturally to you to be so open and free and flow and create a space of comfort?
You know, I don't think anyone has ever asked me that before. I think I'm very mindful that any connection that we have with people is precious. And I'm very inspired to meet people. I love people so much, and I so much want to feel like when we connect, we create something powerful and gorgeous, and I want to be present for that. So if that means that I'm cultivating it, amen, then maybe it's working. But I really do feel like every moment, every day that we have is such a gift, and I just want to be present for it. And so thank you for saying that that's the feeling that you get from me. That means a lot.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt about that. It just sort of oozes out of you now. It seems so naturally and seamlessly. So thank you. Maybe perhaps it has something to do with your name, Neshama, you know, and they say one's name is a reflection of who they are, their soul, no pun intended there. So, you know, it really feels like we're connecting on a very soul level.
Thank you.
Yeah. Growing up with the name Neshama, was that something that you... Were you embarrassed? Was that something? Because it's so different, right? It's not a typical. Did you embrace it from the get-go, or did you take some time to get around to it?
I really did not like my name growing up. I did tremendous amount of theater and dancing and singing class. And every time they would get to the roll call, you know, the attendance, I'd be like, I'm just going to go to the bathroom and just, I'm here. Like, I didn't want to hear them call me some butchered version. It was so different. It made me feel uncomfortable. It wasn't spiritual, it was burdensome. But growing up, I have a million names actually, but my full name is very long, and
How's your full name going, if you don't mind
sharing? I'll tell you. So my parents named me Neshama Tehora Shlucha.
Wow.
That was the name on my birth certificate, and then Karlbach to make it even longer. And then because of, and then of course, because I did not have enough names, they added my, at the naming, so not officially legally, but my, they added my first name, Esther, right before I was named, because my mother's sister-in-law, who had had cancer, died the day before I was born, and they hadn't told her because she was about to give birth, and her name was Essie. And on my father's side, not to get too deep into where that name comes from, but on my my father's grandmother was Esther. She had 12 children, and when she was ready to leave the world, she was ready. She wasn't ill. She called all her children in. She blessed them, and then she lay down and she passed away.
Wow.
And amazing. My father wanted to bring that energy to my name, which was already pretty monstrous. So Esther Neshama Tehora Shlucha Karlibach. It took me a long time to not feel really embarrassed, actually, of the length. And as I grew up, I feel very blessed that my parents saw me like that. You know, I don't know that I always see myself as a pure soul who was sent. You know, I don't know that I see myself that way, or pure hidden soul that was sent when you had the Esther. But I love that they, it brings me a lot of solace when I don't know if I'm doing the right thing in the world, that my parents loved me enough to give me that kind of name.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. There's so many, so much to unpack there. I mean, just to keep on a lighter note, I could connect with you in a certain way, in the sense of my name growing up, I had the problem saying the word, saying the letter R. I used to say, and there's an R in my name, Mayor. So I used to say Mayo. And I would always dread the moment at being called up in class, or being called up like at some sort of event. And I was just like, I still remember till today being like the last kid in line, and the MC was walking down the line with his microphone in his hand, asking each kid to say their name. And as he came close, I was just don't butcher it, Mayor, don't butcher it. And I came out, I rolled my R, I said Mayo. And like, that was just, till today, here I am, 31 years old. I still remember, I was like, must have been seven. But I kind of could connect with the idea of being apprehensive around one's name. Now I own it. I love it. Also, the same idea with Mayor, it was so different. I like to consider myself a citizen of the world. I love to travel. And I wasn't always proud of my name, Mayor. It was different. You know, I wanted to be like a Nick or a Sebastian. Today I could proudly say, and this is for a while now, I love the word Mayor, and the difference of it, the meaning of it to illuminate. And there's so much power behind our names. And yes, you definitely hold space for it. But what you mentioned too, as well, is, you know, that reminder that like, sometimes you may not feel this like pure, this soul, this, you know, whole and complete, which you are, which anybody who's listening is. That insight sometimes that our parents have, or the Ruach HaKodesh, the divine intervention that is given, just by each of us need to have and know, and to like, yo, you're good. You're just the way you are. And that's such an important thing. It's such a big component to one's own healing and journey to know that they're good.
It's so easy to see in other people for me, and so hard to see within myself.
Yeah.
You feel that?
Do you have a hard time accepting compliments or goodness to you? Is it something that you have to work on?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I have to not deflect. I have to not say, oh, you know, you look beautiful. Oh, you look beautiful. I do that all the time. Yeah. I kind of pass the baton back.
Yeah.
I have to work to find the authentic thank you.
Yeah.
I'm a good faker. I think I've said a lot of thank yous that I was like in my head going, it's not true. I don't want to seem ingracious, but no, it's been very hard for me, I think, to love myself. It's a new adventure for me to become my own friend. It's only in the last several years of my life, actually, that I've been able to see my own strength, my own soul.
Would you be able to share what that sort of moment from a couple years ago that sort of shifted your way of living and seeing yourself?
Sure. This is a work in progress. So if I cry, you'll forgive me. So I'm in the middle of writing a book, and that's been its own adventure.
Undertaking. Oh my gosh.
I'm about 100 pages in, and I don't know if any of it is going to be kept, any of it. But reflecting so much on my life, especially in this quiet moment of pandemic, which in my house, you know, we have five children, th- I have two of my own and three stepchildren, and so it's not been very quiet, but there's been a sense of silence, I think, around the encasement of who we are right now. So to process my life, it's been an intense moment. So I have things to say, but it's definitely emotional. So growing up as an Orthodox woman, women are taught, well, I don't want to say are, I was taught, because it's not a general, and I don't want to say Orthodoxy in general, and I don't want to pigeonhole any, but it was very hard for me to grow up as an Orthodox girl. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I had this big talk with my children these days that I want to show them Yentl.
Classic. Love it.
I had the gift of doing a pod, like a little thing, and Mandy Patinkin was on the call. I sang and he sang, and I was like, oh my God.
Tremendous. Mandy.
So tremendous. Oh my God. He was glorious, stunning. And I started thinking about Yentl, because it was such a movie. I mean, I looked at the trailer. Have you seen that trailer in a while?
It's
like old school. It's so good. It's so good. My kids were like, when was this made? My kids were like,
different
no.
Lifetime.
I know. I was thinking we should show them Fiddler. They're like, what is this?
Oh, it's classic. Come on, movie night. We got to go through them. Come on, this is part of...
Right? No, we're going to. I'm determined to take them away from, you know, the Avengers to Fiddler. It's going to happen. So growing up as an Orthodox woman, I wanted to be a man so bad. I wanted to learn. I wanted to do the Yentl thing. I wanted to be with my father. I wanted people to not say, oh, so sorry for you, you never had boys. The legacy dies with you. I mean, if I had a dollar for every time someone said that in front of me. And I grew up apologizing for my existence, you know. And even people who I know respect me, they would say, oh, it's so sad someone ever had a son who could carry him on. And my whole, in my deepest nightmare, I thought that I would be carrying on my father's work to this extent without him also making space between me and him, as I've had to do spiritually. But I really just wanted to be a man, and not because I was unhappy with my body, just because I wanted to fit in a world that didn't allow me to be strong. And I was the first Orthodox woman to sing publicly for men in this generation, and singing out loud, being my full size, it was always a challenge. I've started to speak about this publicly, that my father was taken to Beit Din, to Jewish court, because I was singing with him live. And he was taken by his own shul. Wow. In New York. And he passed away in the middle of a Beit Din process. And when he died, I had to continue it. So I was like, you know, 20 years old, without my father, taken to Beit Din, where they ripped me apart, saying how I was unworthy to be singing, and I shouldn't have been singing in the first place, and I'm only a girl, and I should just make chicken. No. Like everyone else, you know, like this is the expectation of me. And then in the end, they said, well, I could sing if my intention was absolutely pure and if I didn't move my body at all. So when I look at the, and also, of course, Lifnei Iver, we have to be completely promoting it properly. So if, God forbid, someone doesn't understand that I'm a woman from, you know, my name, that I have to say, and just so you know, we are respecting Kol Isha. If you have a problem, don't come. Wow. I had to like say it three different ways in the promotion. And if people look back on videos of me, I was holding on to the microphone and I didn't move at all. Like not a hair moved, because I was so frightened that I would be doing the wrong thing. And it wasn't until I literally left Orthodoxy, when I was like, I can't do that anymore. It was then that I decided that maybe I was worth more than that. I was worth more than just, you know, a woman who defected, who was a bad influence, who did the wrong thing.
Thank you for sharing that. I mean, that's super, that experience could leave anybody scarred and to want to, because I mean, part of, I know a bit about your story and how, you know, you grew up in an Orthodox home. For those who are listening, I'm sure made that know that as well, but to go ahead and decide to leave that comfort, or perhaps it didn't seem so comfortable for you. So maybe perhaps it was just a matter of time, but to leave what you know for the unknown, was there any type of hesitancy, and what kind of support did you have? Did you feel, was this post the passing of your dad when you decided to do this? Was that intentional as well? Did you not want to perhaps disappoint him in that manner? What was that process like for you?
That's a good question. I'm sharing a lot of this for the first time, I want you to know. This is becoming like a part of my internal conversation. So I'm honored to share this.
Thank you so much for sharing this.
Of course.
I know I'm getting a lot of value already, and I'm sure those who are listening are too. So thank you.
I think we all need to share, just by the way, our journeys, because you never know what someone needs, to just give them a little bit more of a hug wherever they are. You know, we're all frightened. I'm not special in that way. You know, we're all scared of our size, of being our full selves.
Yeah, to show exactly. Our light. And yes, and Marianne Williamson has that beautiful poem or saying that says, when you I'm going to paraphrase it, but when you shine your own light, you give people permission to do the same.
Yes.
And I think we are in this specific time and day and age, you know, where we came from a generation where everything was sort of hidden under the rug, a lot of stigma, a lot of silence, a lot of, we don't talk about that. I think this generation, I know this generation and the one after me, even Generation Z and whatnot, have come open and just bashfulness, honesty, authenticity, and perhaps sometimes it's quote unquote oversharing, but I think we need this because in this world that is so connected, we do feel a little disconnected. And
yes,
I think by sharing our stories, as vulnerabilities, it just ties us together. And we're like, oh, wait, you're not alone. Oh, I go through this
yes.
too. And just breaking down the stigmas around mental health, divorce,
yes.
whatever that looks like in any type of relationship, it just makes us more human. And yes. we're able to just like learn from each other's experiences. And
yes.
instead of just, you know, being locked away in one's own mind or one's own heart, we're able to just like lean on each other and say, hey, what did you do to do that? How can I help you? And just, I think, brings us together in a powerful way. I'm sort of riffing right here, but I just,
oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. And I love what you're doing. It's very holy work. I feel very blessed. I feel like a little chilly. I feel very blessed to be with you. To do this with you. And yeah, I agree. That's why we light the Hanukkah candles, you know, and we are lighting our little light. And with one little light, you can bring it and light every light in the world without losing anything. You know,
yes.
you become your full size, and then you can give endlessly. And you give nothing up by lighting someone else's candle. And I think we need that message, that reminder more than ever, that each of us is that light. We have it inside, even when we are in despair or in sorrow. It's always there. So all of this happened much after my father left the world. I got divorced 9 years ago. And at that time when I got divorced, I lost all around me my Orthodox community. And it was an incredible moment of rejuvenation and sorrow and loss for me. I think I knew that there would be some people who, you know, you go through a split in your family, you know, you throw a nuclear bomb in your family and, you know, there are casualties. But within my world, I absolutely lost my entire community. And it made me stop to think, and it made me question where I had come from. I'm going to write about that at some point. At this point, I don't know. I'm still kind of coming to terms.
Oh, absolutely, sure. And I'll send you over this recording so you're able to have, you know, some spark notes, you know, from the conversation, so maybe we'll get in there. But that's wow. That's quite intense to be able to like have like such a big community around you and feel connected, and then head out. And did you know?
And then nothing.
And then nothing.
And it was an amazing. It was amazing to be so loved 1 minute and completely alone the next. And there were all these, you know, things going on at the same time that made me, it was just me. And it was so important in retrospect that I was really alone in that time. My mom, who is still, thank God, my emotional person in so many ways, at that point she had to have open heart surgery. So she was, thank God, we knew right away that she, please God, we were davening she would survive, but it wasn't a perilous thing. She had to have surgery, but I couldn't be with her because she was in Canada, and I wasn't able at that point, my children were very small, to take them out of the country. So I couldn't be with her. My mom was not there, and I was really alone, and I had this moment where I remember so much so vividly about that time that I was in such deep mourning for who I thought I was going to be, and then just hearing a new inspiration. So I, at that point, I also lost my ability to go to the shul that we were at, and I didn't go to shul for a very long time. And I was, you know, I have issues with shul. That's a different conversation, but okay. I loved going when I could. And so not having the space for a prayer. And then I've spoken about this part a lot, that I was blessed to go to a URJ biennial, you know, for the reform movement. And I had known that there was another side of Judaism, you know, like there wasn't just my sheltered smaller space. There was this beautiful liberal world where women were embraced, and I just never had any experience there. I had done a few shows for Reform shuls, and I was never really quite comfortable. I didn't know anything about it. But mostly my work was either in the Orthodox world for women who didn't think I was a bad influence, many did, and for more conservative. And I wasn't really involved in the fabric of what they were feeling or giving. But then when I went to this biennial, it was like this amazing light going off where I was seeing women doing what I did. And I never had any women colleagues as an Orthodox singing woman. I just had a lot of angry men, a lot of aggression and a lot of angry men. And I found my sisters, I found my family. And I speak about it a lot, that it was my finding this community of amazing women who we are far from each other physically right now, but so connected in this moment of pandemic. They gave me the strength to not just appreciate the strength that they carried, but to appreciate myself as a woman. And that was, you know, I stopped wishing that I was someone else or something else. And that was, it was just glorious. And from there, I was able to find my voice of truth and say what I wanted to say for a long time that I never had the courage to, and really be more present in my life and myself when I meet people. I don't know if I was as welcoming before. I don't know. Maybe I was, but I feel it. I feel like I came alive. I had another chance once I was connected to a different kind of Judaism.
Wow, that's, how has your relationship with God changed or shifted, or is it the same but just through a different prism? How does that look like for you?
I love God more now. I think I was angry with God for a very long time. I didn't know who God was to me. I just knew that I had to serve God. It was more of a forceful male God, an angry God, a punishing God. You know, and I would pray and I would try to be good for that God. But now the God that I love is here with me, and, you know, wearing a sweatsuit and yeah. You know, wearing Uggs and comfy pants, and, you know, is a part of my family, my home, the fabric of my conversations, is not threatening. I don't know if God is male or female. It doesn't really matter. I think it shifts all the time, but God is my friend. And that was also a major, huge gift to me, making peace with God.
That's a big one. I think sometimes people who find religion or well, not religion, but I would say God and it's a higher a spiritual connection later on in life, especially if they did not grow up with one, have it easier than those who grew up with a God in any type of religion or confide, then to have to deconstruct that, let that go, and then decide, choose one for themselves again, because there's so much more work over there. It's not like a blank canvas, it's all that debris. And I can relate to that, to your sharing as well, where on my own spiritual journey and path, I've had to come to the realization that the way it was, whether it was taught or translated through my own way of being, I just, the relationship with God, it just wasn't great. It was a very give and take or fear, and it wasn't close to home. Yes. And there was has been a lot of my growth. There has been a lot of work of deconstructing that, letting that go, not serving me, and then creating space to choose God again, but through my own way, for me, for myself, very personal. And that perhaps may lead me down to a space and to a road where it'll be very much in line with what I grew up with, or perhaps mainstream in its own pure form. But to even have, and I was very afraid to even think this way or even speak about this way. I think this is also my first time maybe sharing a bit more vulnerably in this type of space and around. But there's, you know, there's a lot of fear around, like, what will happen if I let go of this one idea for the, perhaps the exchange of another? What will that lead me, and where will that take me? But the fact is, when the comfortability gets so much where it's like, okay, it just, I got, what else can I do? I can't just stay in this space anymore. It was the push that I needed to, and today it's, I have a more clear and defined connection to God, to a higher power, than ever before. And something that I lean on the daily, and as I talk to and I pray to, and there's a real relationship. And some days that I have to fake it. But I even within that, I want to, like, I need to, and it's something that I'm choosing to do, which is nothing short of a blessing. So I think it's cool to have this conversation. And it's also maybe perhaps a little different from some of my other, you know, guests and podcasts, in the sense, because it's a conversation that's a bit different from I would say Orthodox Judaism, in the sense of what people may know or be comfortable. And I think it's so important to have conversations with people that find their own way or path, or think a bit differently than you, or see the world a bit differently than you, because we do share this space in open world, and there's always something to learn about from somebody else. And there's so many lessons even in this very moment that, you know, one could take away from you, Neshama. So it's such a beautiful, like, you know, going into this conversation, I didn't know exactly where and how we're going to go. I like where we are right now. And I think that's always a nice thing. I have, like, this set aside prayer where I say, you know, like, paraphrasing, but, like, you know, God, please, like, put aside, like, you know, my thoughts of, like, who I think I am, who I think you are, who I think other people are. So to allow, to create a space where I can have a new experience for, you know, for who I am, who you are, for the people who I come across today. And, you know, let me just see the truth. So
That so much. I love that. I love that you pray for that. That's how I talk to God too.
Yeah. Wow.
Me and my best self today. I'm really tired, God. Help me. Just, it's casual. It's like, just, I need just a little bit more strength, and I don't want to get in my own way today, God. So just help me. And it's, I love that. I love that you pray before you do this. I pray every time I sing, every time I dive in that my voice will still be there. I dive in that it hasn't gone away, you know, that I don't become frightened of what I have to, of my breath, that it comes out in the best possible way, and that it lands bringing comfort and joy. I dive in just like what you said. That's what I do all day.
Wow.
I love that.
I do love that. And I love, I was doing a little research, and this one has popped up. I think it's from your dad. One of his quotes that says, singing is like praying twice. Yeah. And that's something that I really enjoy and love. I'm not much of a singer myself, but I think there's, you know, when I do, I definitely feel a sense of like really deep connectivity to everything around me. And it's like, it takes everything within to sing. So I think there's, like, it's something that I want to incorporate a bit more into my own practice as well.
Oh yeah. Singing is good. Singing is good. It's a different kind of release, different kind of expression. I definitely encourage you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. are there any other, from when it comes to, like, quotes or lessons, perhaps from your dad, are there any other ones that stick out to you that you sort of lean back on from time to time? A story, a lesson, something that you pull from?
That's also a really good question. I'll tell you, I just actually had this talk with my son, with both of my sons. Because this pandemic is so hard, not, you know, for children not to have their friends. I think it's a different level of sadness and longing than even we have to be with our friends. Children need their people. I mean, we all need our people, but it's a different frustration, I think, for my little ones, for all of our little ones. So I was sharing this because I just wrote it up for my book, but I shared it with them, and it felt very practical and very beautiful. And I should also say, my sons and I, during this pandemic, we walk every day. and we hold hands and we walk. And it's become like our little mid-hug, our little practice that we walk, unless the weather is terrible or too hot or too cold, we walk and we speak really deeply to each other and we share. And it's, I mean, I'll be 100 years old, please God, and I'll never forget these walks during the pandemic. So I shared with them that the last year of my father's life, I had the privilege of traveling with him for 10 months. Was with him on every trip besides the one, the last one that he took where he passed, which, you know, that took me a long time to not hate myself very much for that, that I had chosen not to go, but different conversation. And we were in Vienna. My father was born in Berlin and he grew up in Baden by Wien, which is very near to Vienna, but he had, we were working, you know, I was singing with him every once in a while, but he had his work and I was just, I was like his schlepper. I was carrying everything and I was his bodyguard. And I just wanted to take care of him so much. So we were there in Vienna. It was Friday night and we were walking to a Shabbat dinner. And I don't know where all the people were, but no one was there. It was almost like a pandemic in that sense. Like just knew sometimes you walk down the street and there's no one there. And we were walking, we were holding hands. And the snow was falling so sweet. It was February of 1994. And the snow was falling and you could see it was like crystal in the air, but it was warm. So it had to have been below zero because, you know, snowing. But he was so warm and he had these massive hands. And I remember it was like a big blanket. You know, he would hold my hand. Like you couldn't see my hand when he was holding my hand. And we were walking down the street. And then we passed. It was just like amazing because he had grown up there and he was showing me all these things and he was sharing. And we were in that place. He shared so much with me that, please God, I hope again to share in this book. But he said to me at one point, he said, you know, Neshamala, there are so many reasons that we can be sad. And when you get sad about something, it's so fast that we go to the place where we remember 30 other reasons why we're all so sad. It's not just that. So many reasons. He said, we need to make a list. He said, we, of moments of infinite joy. And we have to keep it next to us. And then when we get sad, right away, look. You could see his face doing it. Right away and see this list. And then we'll remember all the reasons why we have to be happy. And then he said, you also on the same piece of paper have to make a list of the people who really love you for you. Because they're totally there and you have to just write them down. Because when you think you're completely alone, you look at the list, you say, Gewalt, you know, I am not alone. And there are so many reasons to be happy. So I told my children this and they started their own lists. And next to both of my son's beds, they have their lists of infinite joy. And I'm really grateful for my dad for, you know, a whole lot of reasons. We've had a real relationship, you know, especially recently. I have a lot to say to him. He doesn't really answer, but for these little gifts, these little diamonds, moments, endless, inspirational, deep moments that he gave me. I'm so blessed. I'm so grateful.
Wow. That's, you really painted a beautiful picture there. I could sort of like feel the brisk, the wind and the sun and the snow and the warmth of a hand enveloping another. It's really, really special. Seems like your storytelling talents have been passed on amongst the singing and songwriting. That is really beautiful. I mean, I'm sure you have talked a lot about your dad but I'm curious to know, what was it like? What was it like to have, Reb Shlomo as your father? And, you know, and I suppose I'll leave it at that for now. What was that like? I know it's a big question. Just
he was a big every man. Question you've asked me has been big. Just saying. Good job. Glad I had my coffee.
You're holding it down.
Oh my God. I was needing the second cup. It's good. So I, you know, I say this a lot. I don't know, any other father. So to make the comparison, how was it to have him as your father? You know, this was the only life that I ever knew. And, you know, we can kind of walk around it or look at it. I'm honored to look at it. I feel blessed to look at it. I know that there's a lot being said about my dad right now. And I believe every word that is said, because I do not disbelieve people in pain. So I've said it publicly. I say it again every single day. I stand with change and with the Me Too movement. And if my father was here, I would tell him. But from my experience, I never saw that. Not ever. My whole life. I never saw anything but respect and open-heartedness. And the way I describe my dad is, and I'm not going to take you for a tour of my house, but I have this amazing picture that I purchased of someone standing in the rain, and you see all the rain, but the umbrella is over them. And there's literally a space where there's no color. There's nothing but protection. So I say that my father was my great umbrella. But when I was in his presence, and I still remember it, the way he held my hand, the way he held my life, I felt protected and warm and invincible. I felt seen. I felt heard. He was not a typical father in that he never disciplined me, but he was my best friend. And every time he would call, he'd say, "Are you still my best friend?" And I'd say, "Yes." "Are you still my best friend?" Yeah. "Yes." And we spoke, almost, I think I'm a different kind of mom than he was a father, but my children and I are so close and so connected. It's a little bit like that. I see it sometimes. It makes me cry that I'm able to be a present parent for my children in the way that he was for me. So having him in my life, I missed him every day because he was never around, but we spoke every day on the phone. I knew every city code, area code. I still to this day carry his calling card, his credit card, AT&T, in my wallet. Wow. Because when he was alive, he got me a card so that I could call him anywhere in the world. And I knew how to, I was 7 years old. I knew every country code, every
pins, all of it. Yeah. Wow.
And I have them still. I find them every once in a while, all his hotel numbers, because he would go. But if he's in Australia or he's in, South Africa or wherever he was.
What a wild thing. I mean, people, that's, I mean,
right?
People don't, I think, and from a personal perspective, people don't realize, they just know him as as the performer, as the rabbi. But like from a personal level, like how often he was away. Anytime he was with somebody else, he wasn't home with you and, or with your sister, or with your mom. And so it's such a, there's so much sacrifice in that. To giving to the world, but also there's always someone on the other end who's just not receiving that perhaps in that moment too.
Yes. And he was not good at that. He was not good at balancing. He was, everyone was the most important. He didn't have enough personal boundary, and he didn't know how to say no. Because he was so aware of the gift of his life, and he would say it all the time, that the 6 million perished, and yet I am here, and God wants me to run. It was like there was just, he was so driven and so mission-based. And when I say that out loud, in the face of the allegations, I know that that's complicated and potentially triggering for people, that he... I think I'm right now, I don't know if it's just because of, all that we're building in this conversation, I feel more more emotional about him. I feel like I haven't been able to speak about him with love in many years publicly, which is another sadness for me. Because no matter what it was, no matter what, he's still mine, He's still my dad. He's still my person all these years later, even though I'm very angry with him at the same time. But he was so driven. He really did not know how to be anything but present with every person he met. And that meant, yes, that his children suffered, his marriage suffered. He didn't know how to be everywhere. And that's what therapy is for, man.
Yeah.
That's it right there.
It's true. You brought it up, and let's perhaps touch on it, because it be amiss not to. But yeah, it is quite sensitive and complex, in the sense of your dad and the impact he had in his world. I mean, the shuls and the music, and how many people found God and has fallen in love with who they are and their identity. So powerful from one person. And I can't even imagine what it's like. I don't know if you even processed if there was any pressure there. It was just like you're saying, a man of action, just going, not just here I am and this is my gift and let me just give, because there's just as me as a performer, as someone who loves to give, just the magnitude of the spotlight of what he must have had is so daunting, so tempting. So many different types of challenges come along with that light that one has. With the extreme light comes the extreme, you know, it kind of comes with extreme darkness. The peaks come with the lows. Yes. And all that. But you did mention, like, in the article you wrote in 2018 about how you accept the fullness, and you could tell me if I'm misquoting this, but you said, "I accept the fullness of who my father was, flaws and all. I'm angry with him and I refuse to see his faults as a totality of who he was."
Yes.
And I think that's, you know, there's, and you've touched on that, but there could be a mixture of anger and love in with one person. I mean, feelings are weird. Feelings are complex. But also I appreciate your sensitivity as someone, and this is something you've mentioned with your own history with abuse or assault, to stand from your own, with your own personal story, and then standing with people who have experienced it themselves and coming forth saying, "Hey, this happened to me," so close to home.
Yeah.
I can't even fathom, and maybe you can share, like, how do you navigate those waters and those feelings? Because you could literally, everybody has their own experience, but you could literally sort of, you're very close to knowing how that feels. And at the same time, you know, it's your dad, and he's done amazing things, and it's still had a very massive impact till today.
Yeah. So this is my work in the world. You know, we all have our reasons, and hopefully I have more to give, but being able to stand in the middle and see both, and I will not cut off one part of my heart in favor for another. I told you that my connection with my sisters made me appreciate myself. Women of the world who are in pain, men who are in pain, my family, my sisters, my brothers, I hear them. I hear you. No one in the world should be hurt, compromised, frightened. I know firsthand how degrading and terrifying and traumatic that is. I stand with you, and I believe you, and I hear you, period. That's it. And yet, I will not decide to become hateful. I will not close my heart to the incredible soul that was, that is my father, that guided me, that held me, that still does. You know, when I imagine my relationship with God in Uggs, you know, my father is there. And I know that he, you know, we've had to forgive each other for our decisions. And I hope that he forgives me for my stance. But I will not sacrifice my truth to be his daughter, nor will I sacrifice my relationship with him to be the advocate that I am, the activist that I am. We all have this work to do in the world. And I hope that if my story is speaking to hearts, that we have to do both. And I think to become either or, you know, either really angry or very loving, you know, it's like someone is great, so they're only great, or someone is terrible and they're only terrible. Sorry about that. I'm trying to shut off my phone, and it's sometimes working and sometimes not.
No worries.
We lose out. We miss things when we see only one truth, because seeing the whole picture is too painful. And yes, it's incredibly painful. And I say it. I lived in that fire for a long time. But I don't know. This is a funny thing also when it comes to your relationship with God. Can God be all things? You know, can you look at God with fear and awe and also feel comfortable with God? You know, can you find a way to embrace halakha and things that you must do and also choose them? You know, these are big things for people who grew up from to grapple with. You know, can we love and not love at the same time? Yes. I think so many people get divorced because they, you know, they only need to see one part of their partner. Or maybe we get divorced because we only give one part of ourselves. We are all things, all of us. And I think when I decided to be all things and not have to apologize and not have to bend, and I'm saying this to myself, that was my main work in the world. And when I stopped being afraid to do that, that's when I became me. And so in that sense, this moment around my father's history and allegations has been the most painful time of my life. And it is the reason that I have joy. So I'm both angry and not angry. I love him. I don't love him. I'm grateful. I'm not grateful. It's hard. It's beautiful. It's all of that. And I really feel blessed when I'm able to speak about it publicly, that I'm not an expert. You know, I'm not a psychiatrist. And I can't, you know, I don't necessarily feel trained to speak to people who've been abused. I only speak from my heart to say, you are stronger than you think you can be. And yes, you can navigate this if you choose. Don't cut off one part of you for another. Be everything, be your full size.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. That's so powerful. And like you touched on, it is so complex. And there's so much to digest around that and to balance and to feel around. And I know for myself, I want to automatically just say yes to this thing, then no to that. But there's so much more going on. And I think for you to step up and to share, you know, your own experience and to show support to those who've come forth and but also stand by your dad. It's a lot. And it's super courageous of you to do so. And you should continue to have the strength to step into your voice, into your power and shine your special light with all of us. I wanted to just maybe touch back on a few of the, perhaps earlier days, like a question, like, you know, what was Friday night like in your home?
In my home. So I had many homes.
Fair enough.
You know, my life with my mom, because we saw my father probably once a month, my mother and my sister, it was pretty quiet. We had our menu, you know, like we had the things that we made, you know, you know, the special challah and the soup, and you know, it was beautiful. A lot of tahina growing up in my house. When I reflect, we had this like chatzilim, and tahina was like a lot of Israeli influence, but a lot of when I reflect back on Friday night, it was really so focused on all of us creating this dinner. And we would have kind of the same thing, whether we had, you know, 100 guests or whether we'd have just us. And sometimes we were just like in pajamas. And in our home on Shabbat, we did facials. Wow. It's a thing. We would do like, it was amazing. We would do like oatmeal. We would do egg yolk. We would do all these like fun girl. And it was very quiet and we were Shomer Shabbat. So it was, we would read books. We would talk. We would eat. And I remember it so clearly. And then when we go to my dad, it was utter chaos. You know, there was like no quiet anywhere. And it was like the Malava Malka and then the Malava Malka after the Malava, you know, it was like, you know, so bless me to make it short. Oh my God. And then, you know, in the good days, we would have a hotel room.
What do you say the good days? What do you mean by that?
Because my sister and I were not protected from the throngs of people. And we were often left places. And he was busy. And he didn't have it to take care of little children. And we were unprotected. And, you know, my experience when I was molested at the age of 9, that should not have happened. I was not watched. He was gone when that happened. And my sister and I were alone, and we were young. When we got older, it became easier to navigate because we were more independent and we were able to stay in the hotel room alone, or we had friends with us, or sometimes we wouldn't even go. Or when I got older, I would choose to be with him, and then it was my choice. And I would create my own boundary as best as I could and try to protect him at the same time. Wow, I'm sharing a lot today. this is a day of sharing. Wow.
This is appreciated. It's no better way to kick off today, Tuesday, you know? It's 9 a.m. Right? 9 a.m. where I am in L.A. And it's like This is only going up from here. You're thinking the
Shabbos. I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. Absolutely. So Shabbos was different. And then there was also, even within the chaos, you know, there were so many beautiful musical moments where everyone was singing and the music was like another being that lived in Shabbos. And even when we didn't eat till 11 p.m. or, you know. I was talking to my husband actually the other day about Pesach with my father. Oh. Right? So he was so emotional. He said, "Oh, bless me to make it short." You know, he never made it short, you know. So we would always start late, of course, and then like you finally get there, and then he would be so into karpas. He was like in the Seder. I mean, you have to, it's a little bit like you have to know the Seder, you know, but it's like literally a second you do Kiddush, you know, and then it's like karpas like the very beginning.
And he would
be like, "Oy gevalt, the Nebuch radish," and no one loves the radish, and all year no one's paying attention to the Nebuch little radish, and now thank God now we're paying attention. And and then it was just hours of about the radish and about the karpas. And you know, I don't think I ever sat through a whole Seder, you know, or I would go to sleep and then wake up, you know, potentially at like 5 a.m. and he'd be almost at the end of the meal. But that was Shabbos with him. He had no sense of boundary, which I think is what we're also talking about. He had his own space. And if you could be whisked up in it, it was magical. And if you stood outside it with different needs, it was hard. Yeah. No facials when I was with my dad.
No facials with your dad. How old were you when you were able to like comprehend like the incredible impact your dad was having on the world? And like, when did that shift of like, we mentioned how like, you know, he was your dad and you didn't know how to compare any other type of experience because he's the only dad that you had. But right. What was that moment like when you realized like, wait a second, he's larger than life. A lot more people want him. This is not typical. This is something that I have to share and navigate around.
So another really good question. Say that. I always knew everyone wanted him. That was clear when they never let him sleep or eat or, you know, breathe. So the people who needed him like air. So that I knew. That he had important work to do for him. I also knew that very quickly because he would say it. You know, this one needs me. This is my job in the world. Someone's crying. It is my job to dry their tears. I'm out. Like it was the days before Facebook, before cell phones, you know, before, and he was out the door for any human in need. Didn't matter if they were, you know, a Saudi Arabian prince or a homeless woman, you know, who hadn't showered in many years. It was the same need and the same importance. I think the big shift, and I've told this story, happened when I was 15, when I realized that I appreciated him. I think I knew who he was. I just didn't like it. I wanted it to be quiet. I wanted him all to myself. I missed him so much. But when I was 15, I realized who he was. And it was a massive shift for me in my own heart. And I'm really grateful that I was able to appreciate him and to be in his presence, in his work, and cry when it was so heartbreakingly beautiful, you know, in the same way that people get in their cars now and they listen to the Schwarze Wolf or another story that he tells and they just break down. They have to pull their car over. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. Still, if I hear that story, I pull over my car to the side of the road and I'm crying. I was able to feel that in his presence. I was able, when I was 15, he wrote the song David Melech. And I was able to be present enough to watch the melody come down into the world and to see the experience of it being sung for hours. Yeah. And I didn't want to be anywhere else. I was just with him. I was just there. And I was able to tell him that I was proud of him. And I think that was a very big gift also. I was able to say, "You're really tired and I wish you would stop, but I'm really, really, really proud of you. And oh my God, look what you've done. Look what you've done." Mm. You know, able to encourage him.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for his behalf, but I can only imagine what it's like for a parent to hear that from a child, you know, to hear. I can only know from my own experience as a child that I want to make my parents proud. And I think Yeah. And it's only going to change and deepen when, God willing, one day, if I have children, that I would want them to be proud of me, you know? So that's they really will. Special.
Thank you. When you keep talking about praying to God like you do, and when you look at the world, and I don't know you very well, but I just want to say, from the little bit that I know you and from the transformations that you've created in your life, your children will be very, very proud of you. Oh, I promise.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you, Michelle. Amen. So to bring this, there's two more things. Well, before that, I want to actually, do you have a favorite song of his? Is there something that you like to get to once in a while that it's hard? I'm sure there's so many, but is there one that really resonates with you deeply?
So many. The David Melach that I just said, I think that's because I was there when he wrote it and it swirled around me and it got into my blood. It was like an IV, that song, you know, it just kind of got into me. It was written late at night, right after Tisha B'Av in Israel, and everybody was dancing and everyone was singing it, and I couldn't get it out of my head for it was months. So that one is always very special. Nachamu Ami for me has been very, very special. A song of comfort, double comfort, triple comfort. Now in pandemic, I told you I've been doing a lot of events, which I'm so grateful that I can be present. A lot of Nachamu Ami, a lot of that song. And I really, really appreciate so much the concept of the nigun, of the song without words, because words sometimes just get in our way.
Yeah.
Just like our own sadness gets in our way. Words stop us from expressing the deepest truth, and the nigun is pure. It's just the music. And if you can get into that place where you're singing from your heart, when you're receiving that kind of energy, it's incredibly healing. The no word thing. I'm a big fan of cutting out the words, even just for a minute here and there every day. You know, you guys should just be humming something. Just, yes. It's really nice. It's really nice.
It's a beautiful thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And he wrote thousands of songs and they all blow my mind, actually.
Wow. Yeah. What would you say is something that you're from all your accomplishments? What's something that you're most proud of?
Seriously, you're blowing my mind today. I just can't. These are such big questions. Oh my God. I'm glad I slept well last night. Most of all, I'm proud that I'm a mom who can hear her children. And I'm proud that I can be a friend. I have such beautiful friends, but I know it's because I'm able to be a friend to them. And I'm really, really proud that I've been able to somehow survive all the various things that I've survived and that I've not given up. And I'm hopeful that from this place that I've, you know, I said I just recently figured out who I want to be, that from this place my voice can actually bring real solace and healing, especially now. But even, you know, I don't know how it's being received, especially now in Zoom, you know, that I'm here in my home and I'm singing out and I don't see people's faces in the same way. I can't feel their energy. I can't hug them when they cry. I see them. In some ways, it's almost deeper because I can see their eyes. Whereas before, especially in a large venue, I couldn't see faces. It was different. There were lights. It was separated. So now I see them more, but I can't feel them. I just really, really hope that all the intentions of my soul land and that I'm able to do something, you know, and I'm proud of myself for not giving up on that. And I'm proud of myself for having a real conversation with you. Oh. Because I want to have real conversations. I'm tired of walking around telling people what the things that I think they want to hear from me. So I'm proud of
you
that.
Do. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you, again, I'm just so grateful for you showing up very powerfully today. And by doing so, creating a space where I could do the same and share and yes. Things for myself as well.
Dude, I got to tell you, that little image of you as a little boy.
Oh, man.
To say your name. I just want to hug you. Can I just say? Also, my little boy had a speech impediment. He had a lisp and he had the R thing. And he had a little friend named Mayer. He'd say, Mayu.
Yeah. Mayu. I remember. I was on the receiving end of that. I was.
Oh, my God. It was unbelievable. But I'm hugging you. You made it through.
Uh-huh.
it's amazing to want to go back and comfort the children that we were.
Yeah, but, hold that little child. Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I feel it. I feel it. I feel it.
Oh, and good.
It's made me stronger. It's made me the person who I am today.
Yes.
So this is the Great Day Podcast. And so I do like to end off the podcast by asking the guests, what is a great day for you?
Today, every day, when we're alive, it's a great day. I think we are not, we're not able to cultivate gratitude in the way that we need. We keep waiting for this, like the lightning bolt or the seed to open or the lottery win or something. And we don't understand that just the Tuesday in the rain at 4 o'clock when nothing is going on and we posted something and no one really liked it or, you know, whatever. No, it's every day is great. Every moment that we have a chance to breathe and live. What a gift, this moment that we can connect, that we can have our eyes open, that we can see, that we can feel, that we can live. Oh my God. The snow is falling outside my window as I'm in New York.
Wow. Oh, that's, wow.
It's the really, sun really
is
pretty.
Shining through the window as I sit here in LA.
How awesome is that, right?
It's such an awesome thing.
Together.
It's such a cool thing. It's such a cool experience. Yeah.
I'm grateful for the snow. I'm grateful for the rain. Yes. I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful for this day.
Love that. Love that. Neshama, thank you so much. Please share with the listeners where they can find you, what you're excited about project-wise, and anything else you want to share.
Yeah, NeshamaKarlibach.com. It is the longest name in the world. Not well, much.
You shortened us for us, though. You did.
I shortened it for you. I know, only one of my 100 names. I know. Oh my gosh. So myfullname.com has my schedule. If you want to zoom into any of the events, the Shabbat services that I'm doing, just write to me and I will make sure to get you a link. There should be no division between us at this moment. And I'm very, very blessed. I've had the chance to do birthday parties with hundreds of people from all over the world who convene somehow in this way. I had the opportunity to sing for a woman who was turning 90.
Wow.
So cute.
Special.
So sweet. I had the gift. Tomorrow night I'm singing at a Shiva. I've had the opportunity to sing at funerals and to sing for a really, really, for someone so special as she was in the hospice a few days before she left the world. And my work is, it's precious. It's a precious time. And I'm grateful that people out there still want to hear me. I'm grateful to be able to sing even now. And if you want to reach out, if you want to say hello, if you want to come to anything, if you want to, whatever, just... I get a lot of emails, so I'm trying my best to answer quickly, but I will try my best and just know that I'm thinking of you.
Thank you so much. And you do a great job with our you're on it with our correspondence.
Thank you.
So thank you for making the time, Neshama.
Of course.
It was really special. Thank you for sharing your journey, your stories, your insights. And I look forward to seeing you in the real world and share real space with you very, very soon as this world heals.
Amen. Amen. Wear your mask, friends. Let's get this done.
Yeah.
Let's get this done so we can be together again. Thank you for this. This was very special. Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Great Day Podcast. And I want to thank Neshama for taking the time and opening up so powerfully and beautifully with me on today's episode. And of course, a big shout out to SayMazelTov.com, the sponsor for this episode. SayMazelTov.com. Book your personalized video message with your favorite Jewish creator today. Make that celebration, the bar bat mitzvah, the birthdays, the weddings, make any day a special one through SayMazelTov.com. Until next time, like I always say, stay positive, be happy. I'm Mayor K, and have a great day.